And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, flavor, stories from the land, underwear, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Sita Rani Brian.
And today's show is all about the fabric of life, sustainable fiber, as we are looking into organic and beyond food. We have a great show lined up for you today with some experts from the organic cotton underwear company, Pact, and a Fibershed project. Fibershed? Yep. All that and more today on An Organic Conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so great to have a show like this because being in the organic industry for 30 years, I've seen it go from mostly just organic produce, which I was part of, but now there's dog food and cosmetics and cleaning supplies and all types of things. And even though cosmetics and cleaning supplies don't have a law that designates what the organic part of that is, it's just so great. I can walk into the store and get just about anything I want and still live my values. And now there's fiber.
Yes, and we had a great show on body care products, actually, what the regulations are there. Mm-hmm. But
Well, and the quality of organic fiber is so much better now than it has been in years past. I mean, when it first started, organic t-shirts were like wearing burlap bags. And I'm wearing a packed tank top right now, and it's so comfortable. It's kind of like I'm not wearing anything at all.
Ooh. Yeah.
And, okay. And so,
oh, God.
So that'll be a great show.
So it'll be a great show. And but before we get into the show, let's hear the green headlines from Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. The Occupy Wall Street protests, having maintained their place in the nation's media spotlight, have spread worldwide with protests springing across Europe, Asia, and Australia. Gatherings have occasionally turned violent, but have largely remained peaceful in keeping with the original intent. The rapidly spreading movement has been galvanized by the backlash against what organizers call the out-of-touch corporate, financial, and political elite. The Windy City celebrated green fashion last month with the Vert Couture Eco Fashion Show that took place during the city's fashion-focused Chicago event. The nature-inspired creations shown on the catwalk were made from sustainable fabrics such as hemp, cotton, and bamboo, and used natural dyes. In addition to clothing, designers showcased eco-friendly swimwear and jewelry, and the event's organizers went so far as to offset the carbon emissions of the event. The show's proceeds benefited the Keep Chicago Beautiful Fund, a curbside recycling nonprofit organization. And shrimp fishermen who saw their livelihood impacted by the BP oil spill may soon be seeing some relief as a $20 billion fund set up to compensate them will see a relaxation of claim rules. The fund has thus far paid out $5.5 billion to 200,000 people, which, according to the House Committee on Natural Resources, is unacceptably low given the number of claimants. The company has denied relief funds to over 300,000 Gulf residents since its beginning, but there are hopes to have new rules in place by the end of the year. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thanks, Jen. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Brian.
And we will take a quick break, but stay tuned for a great guest here in the studio with us as we are taking our clothes off and are looking at sustainable underwear, figuratively speaking, only here on An Organic Conversation. More on that when we come back right after the break. We are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Brian.
And most of us know what a food shed is, but have you ever heard of a fiber shed? Today's show is about sustainable and organic fiber and fiber products, literally going to the bottom of it as we are exploring the world of organic underwear. It's fascinating to learn that change starts with your t-shirt or socks and that we now have a great sustainable source to go beyond our organic food choices and why we should consider what we put onto our bodies. Organic fiber, sustainability beyond food. Today's topic on an organic conversation. With us now here in the studio is Jeff Denby, the creative chief creative officer and co-founder of PACT, PACT Underwear from Berkeley, California, joining us. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You are saying in your bio you spend too much time on Facebook and BART.
which I simultaneously?
Yeah, that's great.
Actually, yes.
Very funny. How did this come about? All the way you were working for General Motors, already kind of in the sustainable world and alternative fuel department. What made you think of, let's start an organic underwear company?
Yeah, it's a circuitous route from alternative fuels at General Motors to organic underwear.
Yes and no, but yeah.
Yeah, I actually have a mechanical engineering undergrad, and I started out in cars and decided that was not for me. I had a love of design, a passion for product design, and so I quickly moved into that space and found myself in China and Vietnam in factories, getting everything from forks to furniture manufactured, just in that space, just started realizing that we could do it so much better than we actually do. Got hooked up with
What do you mean by that? Like, what did you see that just turned your stomach, or just you thought, this is not smart?
Yeah, you know, in some cases I would walk into factories and just want to actually turn around and walk right back out and thinking, oh my God, I can't believe that the things we use every day are being made in this way. Dust in the air, carcinogenic dusts floating through the air. The heat was overwhelming in some of these places, and not to mention what was probably happening as far as corruption on the back end goes. But I also learned the sort of garment apparel manufacturing process while I was over there by sort of, you know, getting myself into factories and finding out how this was made. And that's really where I was inspired to think about organic and sustainable production. And when I came back to the U.S., this is about 6 or so years ago, organic cotton products were just starting to hit the market, really. Yes. Mm-hmm. And everything was oatmeal colored and made of hemp. And
so true.
And it just felt like, God, why? As someone who's interested in design and fashion and production, why can't we make it interesting?
Yes. It was almost counterproductive. I remember first, 20 years ago, the first like hemp shirts. It literally looked like you were wearing a burlap bag with a cutout. I mean, it was really so ill-designed that I thought, can we really not make this better as an industry?
Can we not make it beautiful and desirable?
Yes.
And, you know,
comfortable.
Can we not, exactly. Mm-hmm. All of these sorts of things. And that was really my inspiration. I came back here and did my MBA at the Haas School of Business at Berkeley. And this became my full project, my obsession. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so you were mentioning that in your travels, when you came back, you felt like you needed to incorporate organic cotton into this. Why organic cotton?
It really felt like it was part of my own personal value set at the time. Also, organic food was really starting to sort of come to the forefront of conversation. And I felt like, why can't we also talk about other organic and, you know, like as you're talking about cleaning supplies and this kind of thing, like there's all of the products that we use every day are made with something, and probably we can make it with something better. And organic is just it's better than using pesticide and, you know, in regular conventional cotton.
So tell us about the cotton industry then. Like, what about the kind of traditional cotton industry and the organic cotton industry makes this so much better?
You source from the U.S. only, where do you get your organic cotton from?
Actually, everything that we manufacture is made in Turkey. And it actually took me about a year to find the right factory for us to work with. And part of the thing was, and I traveled all over the world looking for the factory, including around here in the U.S.
What's the right, quote-unquote, factory?
Yeah, and that for us was a factory that also held the same values that we do, and that was a commitment to organics, a commitment to social responsibility in manufacturing and in labor, and a commitment to environmental responsibility. So it was important for me as an owner of a brand to go all the way to the very bottom of the supply chain. I've actually stood in the cotton fields in Turkey, seeing the people pick the cotton just to know where does it come from. And I think that's a really rare thing in this field mm-hmm. for people to even visit their factory, let alone say, take me to the cotton fields. They said, nobody has ever asked to go to the cotton fields. Why would you want to go? And I said,
yeah.
And they're like, there's nothing actually happening there other than picking cotton. I was like, I need to see it. And I was like, I also want to see where you store the cotton. Where is it being ginned? Where is it being knit? And so they took me through that whole process so that I could understand it better and to also get, you know, confirm what was actually happening.
Talk about social responsibility. That's amazing.
You are listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryan.
And in the studio with us, Jeff Denby, the Chief Creative Officer and co-founder of PACT. PACT underwear. What does PACT stand for, Jeff?
You know, when we were thinking about naming the company, we threw around a lot of ideas and a lot of names, and it just sort of came back to this idea of PACT, and a PACT is a promise, and it's groups of people coming together to agree on, you know, like, we promise our nonprofits, we promise a common idea.
Yeah,
exactly. And so as a brand, we're making a pact with consumers, with our nonprofits, with our manufacturers.
So guide us through, why underwear? Why did you choose that product after market analysis, I'm sure? And then guide us through the process of what you found in Turkey. But what's the production of cotton? Where does it start? But I did want to ask why underwear earlier already. Why that product?
Yeah, because no one was doing it. And basically what it came down to is, you know, my background is not in fashion design per se. It's more in mass production of products. And when you think about underwear and socks and t-shirts, some of these like everyday essentials,
you don't really think about it, right?
I mean, yeah,
we eat
exactly.
organic food, but we, you know, pretty much buy whatever often.
Yeah.
Clothing wise, what's there?
Exactly. And everybody has to buy underwear, at least I hope they do, you know, and everyone buys socks and everyone buys essentials. And that was really a huge piece of it. It was like, if we're going to make a difference in this supply chain, in this industry, where can we have the most effect? And that would be on products that people sure. have to buy
yes.
or are going to buy. So if you're going to buy underwear, then allow us to give you a product that's a little bit better than the conventional underwear that's out there. And also, considering my background, it is a more a mass-produced kind of product, and that's where my expertise really was in.
I learned, actually, a few years ago that some people don't wear... what's it called?
Commando.
Going incognito?
No.
Oh, going commando.
Commando.
That's right. Going commando. Okay, well... we do want to learn all the steps of organic cotton production and non-organic, just to have that comparison of why it actually matters. Mark has a little delay today, but that's okay. All its known time.
I just wanted you to elaborate on that.
I thought it was called going incognito,
but
maybe it's the same. As we are looking into the fabric of life, organic cotton, and why those choices really matter of what we put onto our skin, metaphorically, physically, on all levels, socially. Stay tuned. We'll take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, trace-sf.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Bowman College has been offering professional training in nutrition and the culinary arts since 1989. Natural chefs will learn to master a healthful approach to classic culinary techniques, while nutrition consultants become experts in client consultation and the promotion of individualized plans for optimal health. Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. To find out more, visit bowmancollege.org. That's BAUMANcollege.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And today's show is about sustainable and organic fiber and fiber products. We are exploring the world of organic underwear and beyond. Fascinating to learn that change starts indeed with your t-shirts or socks. With us in the studio is Jeff Denby, the creative chief creative officer and co-founder of Pact, Pact Underwear out of Berkeley, California. Mark, we were talking right before the break about the steps of production, from planting. You mentioned ginning. Is that like? Can you guide us through what does it take to plant the cotton field to? And then, Mark, I would love your expertise on what does that look like in non-organic production. Mm-hmm. But before we dive into all of that, there we go. Here is our weekly update, Mark Mulcahy, with what's in season.
Smooth as silk. Smooth as silk.
You thought I forgot. Oh, no, not so.
Absolutely.
Totally.
Well, what's in season? What I, you know, one of the things that I really love about autumn is pomegranates. They come in, and people start buying them in October, but really when they really are good is in November. That's really when the wonderful pomegranate, that's the variety, comes into season, and it's actually, I think, the best-tasting pomegranate, and I'm sure you'll find out if you go out and buy some pomegranates. Pomegranates come in really deep, dark pink or deep red. They generally have a shiny skin, and you don't want them to have cracks and blemishes on them. So you want a nice, smooth pomegranate. And as I always say, is whatever fruit you buy, it should be heavy for its size. Pomegranates are no exception to that. They should be very heavy for their size. Light pomegranates will not have the same flavor that you're looking for because the seeds will tend to start getting dried out. If you want to know how to pick a good pomegranate, once you've found out that it's got this beautiful red or pink skin and it's also heavy, then you want to tap it two or three times with your forefinger, and the sound should sound almost metallic when it's tapped, and that's due to the large amount of juice inside. It's almost like a pingy sound. And unripe pomegranates will have a hollow sound, and overripe pomegranates will be more of a muted thud or a dull sound. So once you realize you've got the perfect pomegranate, you get it home, a lot of us have trouble getting the seeds out. We don't quite know what to do, and we don't want to get that red juice on ourselves because it really stains no matter what you're wearing. And so I used to just break them open and then go outside with my daughters, and we'd put on old T-shirts and we'd sit on the porch and then spit the seeds out. But that's not what I'm going to recommend to you. If you want to get the seeds out easily, what you do is you cut off the flowery end, you score it into sections, and then you place the pomegranate into a bowl and you let it sit for about 5 minutes in a bowl of water. And then you go ahead and you reach your fingers down in there and you take the seeds out of the skin, and they come apart easily, and the seeds will all sink to the bottom of the bowl. So then you just pour out the water, and then you've got all your pomegranate seeds there. If you want to make yourself some pomegranate juice, let the pomegranate sit on your counter for a while to get warm, room temperature, and then roll the pomegranate around on the hard surface just enough so you can start feeling the seeds and the membranes getting soft in there. Once you feel it's gotten soft, you can just poke a hole in there and you can squeeze the juice right out. So go out and get some pomegranates. Don't just buy a bottle of juice on the shelf. Go out and get a real pomegranate. You won't regret it. And yes, you can eat the seeds. Often people say, well, can I eat the seeds? Yes, you can, and you should. And you will be completely immersed in autumn once you start take your first bite of that beautiful pomegranate. So that's what's in season.
Thank you, Mark. Beautiful pomegranates. What a beautiful, beautiful fruit, actually. I love it. It's very holiday-ish. I mean, that's, you know, ultimately that's the season, and this is the season of holidays, but it's gorgeous when I see them, as pretty much no other fruit that I can think of that reminds me more of Christmas and soon to be going home to Germany. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you. Today's show is about sustainable and organic fiber and fiber products, and that we now have a great sustainable source to go beyond our organic food choices, and why we should consider what we put onto our bodies. With us in the studio still is no less but Jeff Denby, the Chief Creative Officer and co-founder of Packed Underwear out of Berkeley, California.
So, Jeff, right before we went to break, you were talking about all the visiting that you did when you were looking for the right factory, the right farm. You talked about the ginning process and the spinning process. Can you walk us through the process of making organic cotton fiber and kind of what the differences between traditional, conventional cotton and organic cotton?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to start off, I would say that the apparel industry making clothing is one of the most complicated supply chains in the world. And I think a big issue is that consumers don't actually understand how much effort goes into making a single T-shirt. Mm-hmm. And just going all the way back to the cotton itself, most people don't understand that they're wearing an agricultural product to start off with, which yes. is, you know, that's a part of the education that really needs to be done. Clothes don't come from a department store.
Yes.
So, you know, the difference between organic and conventional really comes down to, I guess, at a high level, pesticide use, and that there's no pesticides, fertilizers, herbicides allowed to be used in organics. I think it's something like 2.5% of the arable land in the world is devoted to cotton, but more than 25% of the pesticides used in agriculture is put onto cotton.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's an enormous amount, and of course, the amount of pesticides then seep into the watershed and affect drinking water, they actually affects the animal life within the water. It's really incredible the amazing effects that these pesticides have. They're carcinogens.
And just to clarify for our listeners, of course, there are many types and methods of fertilization used in organic practices, but you were referring to synthetic fertilizers to enhance soil quality, and yes, those are indeed not allowed, and those end up in the waterways too with the pesticide and the synthetic fertilizers. Yes, Mark.
And one of the things, Jeff, you were mentioning the pesticides actually affecting the aquatic life, where all the GMO cotton that's being grown right now, which is one of the third highest crops of being grown GMO, is there's a lot of herbicides used because it's herbicide resistant, and those herbicides are what they're finding that are affecting the aquatic life, not only nearby the farm, but they're actually finding that Roundup is actually being able to travel, and they've actually got Roundup rain in the Mississippi Valley now.
And I think I think most of our listeners might know what Roundup Ready cotton GMO. GMO is genetically modified organisms, and there's now cotton approved and grown on many, many million acres throughout the world that resists a certain pesticide. So the application of the pesticide is no longer defined by the borders of the field. The plane can literally just zip over the entire field. It kills everything but the Roundup, in this case, resistant cotton. The idea was that it would reduce pesticide use, and it had actually shown now that it increases pesticide use because it can just vastly be used. It doesn't harm the plant anymore, but it does go somewhere, of course. And yes, but Jeff, go on. So there's the growing, the health of the, what is it, a field?
The field
of cotton?
I mean, the field itself is really important. You can put so much pesticide onto a field that it actually renders it useless in the future. And so organic farming is a whole sort of way of life, you know, and there's a number of mechanical techniques that go into, you know, rotating crops and all this sort of like co-cropping and, yes. and this sort of thing, which I'm no farmer, but I'll tell
you. We talk about that on the show every week.
Right. Okay, good. Much. So your listeners are experts. But when it comes to actually then after the cotton is grown,
yes.
The supply chain itself, you know, consists of quite a
are the harvesting
number of
methods
steps.
Roughly the same when you look at a organic versus non-organic field?
There would be no, I don't imagine there would be much difference in it. There is mechanically harvested with a machine, or there's also hand-picked. And when you mechanically harvest cotton, you can tear it and you can shorten the fiber, which will make for a more rough material. When you hand-pick it, it's, of course, like a much gentler process. And so our cotton actually is hand-picked. Part of the problem there is that you have actual people in the fields laboring to pick this. And so you want to make sure that these people are being treated fairly and they're getting a fair wage for their action. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go right to the cotton fields to see it
sure.
for myself, to see who the people were, to understand how they were being treated and how they were being paid. I mean, in Turkey, they often call me Mr. Questions because everywhere I go.
That's so great.
What always, a great title.
Yeah, have. And I said, that's fine. I'll take Mr. Questions any day because there's going to be a few more of them coming up.
Most of us are Mr. No Question. No questions asked. No, this is great. Yeah.
So after they pick the cotton, there's a number of steps that they do go through. And the first is actually interesting is storage. And organic cotton needs to be stored in a completely different location and place than conventional cotton. And that's true for the entire supply chain. And so when you start thinking about how you have to segregate the cotton.
Why is that?
Because you can't sell organic product or organic cotton as organic cotton if it's been mixed up with conventional cotton. Mm. And so when the first process is ginning, and that's where you shake the seeds out of the cotton, because you get these really the dark black seeds are inside the cotton. You need to take the cotton off of that. There's a number of processes involved in ginning, and then sort of broadly speaking, it goes to spinning, where the cotton is then combed and turned. The fibers are sort of spun together to create the yarns.
Threat, yeah.
And then from that stage, it goes to knitting. An interesting thing about the knitting stage again is that the cotton needs to be kept separate from conventional cotton. And so knitting machines kind of look like spaceships, very sort of interesting circular machines. Once you knit a fabric with a conventional cotton, and if the next day you want to knit a different kind of fabric with organic cotton, you actually need to clean out the entire machine. And this can take up to 12 hours to do.
Yeah, this is the same is true for organic food production, right? Yeah, if you have an organic run, how it's called, you have to clean the entire equipment before you actually do it to make sure there's no residue of any kind of pesticides whatsoever in the equipment.
Exactly. And so once you've finally knit the organic product, you know, then it goes to the different stages of processing, such as dyeing and printing. And this is always a challenging place for apparel production because dye inherently is a chemical. We only manufacture our products in GOTS certified factories. This is GOTS, Global Organic Textile Standard. And this specifies the kinds of dyes and chemicals that can be used on organic fibers. And this is something that is really a challenging place for the industry, but something that they're always working on. And so this is sort of the global standard for dye for the entire production process, but in particular dyes. There's a number of other certifications like Ecotex and that kind of thing that we also make sure that we are following as well. So after the dyeing, there's the printing process. And again, we only use water-based printing because there's a lot of chemical kinds of printing, which limits us in colors and that kind of thing. So you have to start getting creative in design because you know that you're going to be limited in your production process. And of course, after that, we go to cutting and to sewing, which is the most labor-intensive portion of the apparel supply chain, and probably the one that consumers are the most familiar with, mm-hmm. Probably mostly because there's been a lot of labor and social condition issues yes. mm-hmm. When it comes yes. to that. But the amount of effort and time that has to be taken to get to that actual point, I mean, a cycle for producing a garment is generally around 3 to 4 months.
Wow.
And so the cut and sew is about
From the time of harvest?
Much longer than that, actually, if you go all the way back to the time of harvest. So when I place an order, they begin to knit the fabric. So they've already got the yarn in their hand.
Stored.
Yeah, and then they knit the fabric, and that's about 3 to 4 months. And cutting and sewing is probably about 2 to 3 weeks of that process.
Wow.
And it took you a year to find that one manufacturer in Turkey. They do all of it for you?
Yeah, that's the great, amazing thing about this manufacturer is that they only do organic. They are committed entirely to it, and they have partnerships throughout Turkey with other factories that are also GOTS certified, as I mentioned. The fields are certified by the textile exchange, formerly the organic exchange, which certifies agricultural conditions for cotton growing.
So sometimes we hear, you know, people being doubtful that organic products from overseas meet the USDA federal standards to be called organic here in the United States in terms of food products. And there is lots of opportunity for commingling. You were saying that the separation after the kind of the post-harvest handling after the harvest of organic cotton and non-organic cotton is critical and is really overseen and checked up on. Do you know of any materials that are applied as fumigants, for example, in non-organic cotton production during that time? How long can they store cotton? And is there any issue with any kind of, you know, moths or something coming in? Or is it really just about keeping those two separate so you know what you're paying for?
Yeah, there's definitely an issue when it comes to knowing what you're paying for, and that's a big point of controversy in the industry, making sure that actually what you are receiving
is what you ordered, right?
Is what you ordered, and it really is organic.
How do you guarantee that?
You have to
trust
in the certification bodies, and you have to make sure that the certification bodies are actually going out to verify on a sort of yearly or depending on if it's necessary, like bi-yearly type thing, to make sure that what's happening is actually really what is going on. There are countries that is more difficult mm-hmm. to do in than in a country like Turkey, which is really pretty fairly open and easy, has easy access to the all the way down to, through the supply chain. But it becomes really challenging in other countries.
Yeah, and a company we work with, the Ginger people, same thing. They go to Australia or to their, you know, supply countries to really have a hands-on look themselves. And I imagine you go regularly too to just check up and make sure everything is in place.
Absolutely, we work very closely. I probably go about 4 times a year to Turkey to check.
Well, that's a good reason too.
It's not the worst place in the world to go. It's great.
Yeah.
We're looking at organic fiber products and why it matters what we put onto our bodies. With us in the studio is Jeff Denby, the Chief Creative Officer and co-founder of Pact from Berkeley, an organic underwear company making socks, underwear, and organic t-shirts. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryan.
And we want to look more closely at fiber and fiber production, an interesting project. It's not a food shed. It's a fiber shed with our next guest coming up. But before we do that, here's our very own Chef Sita with Your Holistic Bite.
Thanks, Helga. Well, we're talking about pomegranates today, and pomegranates have been huge in the news and media. People are kind of wild about it as being this amazing source of antioxidants, and it completely is, actually. The pomegranate has three kinds of antioxidants in it, three kinds of polyphenols, which are nutrients, phytonutrients. It has anthocyanins, which I've talked about before, usually with berries. So in the summertime, you've probably heard me say that word quite a few times, as well as tannins, which are what give red wine their health benefits. So these polyphenols, antioxidants, help reduce the oxidative stress on the body, which means that it's actually reducing your risk of heart disease and cancer. So pomegranates are also a really great source of potassium. And potassium is good for regulating your blood pressure as well as regulating your heart rhythm. So super good for you. Everything that you're hearing about it is probably true. So find out ways that you can eat it and enjoy it. And I think something that's a big stumbling block for people is the fact that the fruit is kind of hard to get to being on the inside. You know, Mark was talking about how you can de-seed it and the suggestion about rolling it or putting it in water. Those are all really great ones. When I first started working, when I was a chef intern at a restaurant, I was once given a gigantic flat of pomegranate and they're like, we want pomegranate juice. So get us pomegranate juice. And I spent hours slicing into these pomegranates and whacking them with the back of a spoon to get all of these seeds popping out all over the place. And my white chef coats were all red and anybody who walked by me got red. So Mark suggestion of cutting them open, putting them in water, kind of pulling those arils, those seeds out is a really good one. And then draining it, and you can put those seeds into your blender, your juicer, puree it, and then put it through a fine mesh strainer like a chinois or a regular colander lined with cheesecloth, and you'll get all of that gorgeous, beautiful red juice and then super concentrated polyphenols. So using that juice in sauces is really creative, whether you're doing it savory or sweet. It's great with game, so lamb maybe with a pomegranate reduction, or serving it over ice cream. You can put it into smoothies, blueberries, bananas, and pomegranate for breakfast. Yum, sign me up. Or mix it into your cocktails for something that's a little bit exotic and sexy. You know, it'd be really good with champagne cocktails or sparkling water and lime juice or whatever your alcohol of choice is, maybe a little bit of orange blossom water to elevate that whole sensual experience. And then, of course, putting it into your fruit salads. And because its color is so dramatic and its shape, too, it's different than anything else. I mean, there are these seeds and they're coated with this gorgeous maroon colored fruit around it. It makes a really lovely contrast in a savory salad with golden beets or in a winter fruit salad with some segmented citrus and lime juice. So that is just a little something to whet your appetite for pomegranates with this week's Holistic Bite.
Thank you. That's Chef Sita, the weekly culinary delight here on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Ronnie Bryan.
And we're talking about fiber. Most of us know what a food shed is, but have you ever heard of a fiber shed? With us now calling in from Sonoma, California, is Rebecca Burgess, who's the founder of the Fiber Shed Project. Rebecca, are you with us?
I am.
Thank you so much for being part of the show. Great to have you.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Hello.
We're looking at organic cotton choices of products, of the fabric of life, and we stumbled upon your amazing project of and the challenge of living for 1 year in clothes made from fibers that are solely sourced within a geographical region no larger than 150 miles from your front door. And this includes natural dye colors as well. Tell us about how you came up with the idea and what's the Fiber Shed Project now.
I originally came up with the idea after doing a lot of research across the country on natural dyes, and I studied with ethnobotanists in the Ozark Mountains, the Rocky Mountains, the Southwest, California, and found that there were these amazing natural color traditions that had been in existence before the Industrial Revolution and were, again, looking like really sweet alternatives to color as it's made today, which is made from coal tar and heavy metal bases. And I thought, wow, a botanic-based color. What a revolutionary idea. And to find out that, you know, you could have so many beautiful colors in the spectrum provided by plants and that they were abundant in all these different regions, and every region per season, like any food shed, would provide different different palettes, like in terms of the Ozarks, you have pokeberry pink and goldenrod yellow and elderberry lavender coming through midsummer all the way through late fall. And then the Southwest had all these amazing forms of sagebrush, rabbit brush, cliff rose, really like burnt umbers and rust colors and iron oxide tones.
God, it sounds delicious when you
Doesn't
speak.
It? Oh
I want to eat that. Where can I buy it? Go on. Sorry.
Well, color is great like that. If you know, I've heard people say natural dyeing is a way to diet because the colors feed your senses the way food feeds your stomach.
No and, kidding.
Yeah, so people who have taken on natural dyeing, like, God, it's a great weight loss program. But anyway, I definitely got inspired by the things that you're hearing, and I, too, was just kind of flabbergasted by the beauty and the way it rolls off the tongue as well. It just sounds right. It feels right. And I came back from my travels and wrote a book on it, and I realized while I was out there that the canvas for the color often, in most cases, was a local fiber source. And I saw all these people raising animals, both for meat and for fiber, none of them making any money off the fiber, some of them making money off the meat. And I thought, gosh, you know, here are these farmers, and they're not even able to wear, you know, the fiber that they're raising. I don't see the fiber that's grown in the United States represented on the backs of any Americans. It's here. The sheep are growing it every year. There's so much of it. We don't even know what to do with it, and yet no one's wearing it. No one's even using it for insulation in their homes.
Yeah, we are literally throwing wool away in this country because there's no real market for it. Yes.
And so that was what the fiber shed was a response to, was that those issues.
And you use all kinds of materials, including recycled materials, and we want to hear all about that. Stay tuned. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. We're talking with Rebecca Burgess, the founder of the Fiber Shed Project. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Bryan.
And we'll be right back after the break. Stay tuned. You just might find sitting in the stars, glistening, glistening, waiting for the band to come. Just waiting for the band to come. Oh, I wonder.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at BowmanCollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N College.org.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience.
by fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food. Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, trace-sf.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Bryan.
And we're talking about sustainable fabric, organic cotton, and beyond. With us on the phone is Rebecca Burgess, the founder of the Fiber Shed Project.
Hey, Rebecca. So I wanted to ask about the recycled materials that you use. Helga mentioned it right before we went to break. Can you tell us, do you make all of your own fiber or some of it's recycled?
Currently, everything is, I guess you could say it's recycled from the soil and the sun, but I'm not actually using a refurbished garment ever. Mm. That was part of the challenge, was to see if I could source from the farmland, from the soil, really, plant life. And animal byproducts like wool and alpaca, and see if I could formulate a wardrobe with those very basic raw materials. And so I don't currently refurbish vintage pieces. So nothing in my wardrobe, I would say, is typically understood as a recycled garment. It's from pretty raw sources.
And so everything you're wearing or everything you are wearing for this project, you were able to source within 150 miles?
I was, except for zippers, buttons. Some buttons are made here. It would be very easy to make more of them. Notions. We had an exception for notions. We also had an exception on some of the milling. Because manufacturing jobs, as we know, are, you know, they're a signifier of actual manufacturing equipment. When we don't have jobs, we often don't still have that equipment. And our region has kind of a manufacturing blight that has occurred. So while we're in this hub of the Bay Area, or I am in this hub of kind of an economic bubble in some ways, we have lost a lot of equipment to manufacture and value add product from fiber farms. Most of that equipment left with the signing of NAFTA and the FTAA, timed almost within a year of the signing of those agreements. Mm. So when I went back to look for cotton, for instance, I had that whole trade history unraveled to me by Sally Fox, mm-hmm. who is my stalwart, organic, color-grown, non-genetically modified cotton grower who lives 90 miles from me. And she still had fabric that had been milled in Richmond, California in the early 90s and late 80s. She kept it in boxes. And she said, you know, if you're going to clothe yourself for a year, you're going to be awfully uncomfortable in hand-knit wool completely. So why don't we put you in some cotton? And this will, you know, give your wardrobe a slightly more palatable face. People will be able to see what you're wearing and say, you know, I'm not going to itch myself to death in that. I have some cotton to wear. So I did. I constructed garments. I sewed. I drew patterns up and made, and other people did as well, made clothing from her cotton.
And if people wanted to see, you know, the work that you did and lived on for that year, they can visit your website?
Right now, our website just changed. It's www.fibershed.com. We moved from a WordPress blog off. Now we have a website that's integrated with all, so it has all the stories of the farmers and artisans that collaborated to birth the one-year wardrobe. Mm-hmm. It was definitely not a singular project. I kind of function as a spokesperson and a wearer of the garments. I've sewn a few. I've knit one, but there's, you know, now 25 garments that have been made by other people.
What's your your goal with it? I mean, we're you know, shedding light on local food systems to highlight the importance of it. Is that the same notion of just seeing what can be done in your case and make people aware of the beauty that's inherently included in local, whatever it may be?
Well, exactly. The first step was awareness. As in anything, you know, there are fiber farmers that have been trying to sell their yarns and fiber goods on the market, on the open market, for decades, and they've made no headway. Very little, I should say. I shouldn't say no, but very little headway. Most of the women and men doing fiber farming are retired. They're not economically dependent on the sales of their fiber goods. So I thought, you know, what's missing? Why do we not have a marketplace for this farmed product, which is the same as you eating a pastured steak, pasture-grazed beef steak, or, you know, leather comes from those cows. We wear leather. The nettles you put on your pizzas and your nettle soups, that can make a bast fiber. There's this connection between food and fiber is intricate. So I thought, well, what did the slow food movement do, you know, for food farmers who, yes, they had been around before the slow food movement, but how did the slow food movement give a face to it? And what it did is it used an educational model. It used using an actual taste palette for each region, and making the most of each region's gifts and bounty through teaming chefs up with farmers. Mm. So I teamed knitters up with sheep ranchers, and I teamed designers up with our cotton farmer, Sally Fox. And I took urban design talent, and I matched it with fiber farmers. So that, again, that was part of an education and an awareness and a birthing of something new. And now the goal really was that just through the year of R&D that I've done, that there would be all of these, of course, hurdles and challenges to birthing it. And whatever hurdle and challenge that I faced personally would turn into a business opportunity for someone. Hmm. So if we don't have fine gauge wool yarns, we need a mill. So someone piped up in Mendocino County and said, I want to make fine gauge yarns. I want to make things so people can wear base layers and wonderful, like, you know, performance gear out of our homegrown wool. I'll start a mill. So we have this, you know, guy doing all these plans, solar panel, hot water from solar, everything solar for his mill design, and he's up and moving forward on his R&D. So it was interesting. That's one example of many of how my challenge is.
Yes,
that's what
happens actually when we look at local solutions, and we encounter lots of challenges, but they're all possibilities for other things to sprout up. So yes, again, that website is fibershed.com. Thank you, Rebecca, for that idea and for having it, managed to what it is now. Lots of great stories of inspiration on that website. Again, fibershed.com. Rebecca Burgess, the Fibershed Project co-creator, owner. Was this your sole idea? I think you birthed it, right?
I did. I birthed it, but I'm definitely a co-creator with a collaborative group. So
thanks for your work, and we'll keep track of your efforts. Thanks so much for joining us today here on Organic Conversation. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rebecca Burgess, the founder of the Fibershed Project. Again, that's fibershed.com. And with us in the studio still is Jeff Denby, the co-owner and co-founder of Packed Underwear.
So, Jeff, your commitment to sustainability goes so far beyond just the product. Your packaging is made from excess cuts of the fabric, and you have these pouches that people can reuse, and recycling to be able to send your used garments back. Can you just tell us a little bit about the sustainability efforts that you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. We try to think beyond just the garment and think about once the garment starts to be delivered to the consumer. We want to make sure that they have an environmental and social sort of feeling throughout the entire brand experience.
Your responsibility doesn't end there.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so how we're shipping it, we ship in these compostable mailers. Everything that you get, nothing needs to go in the landfill. So everything is either compostable or recyclable or can be kept and reused. In fact, even our warehouse is a training facility for adults with developmental disabilities. And so everywhere along the way, we look for opportunities to do something a little bit better, to have a little bit more of an impact.
And there's no plastic used whatsoever, right? You use these leftover cuts of the fabric to make these tiny, cute pouches that actually serve really well for some electronic equipment to be used, you know, beyond the original use to store an underwear. I have them all over my house. Yeah, I have like hard drives in there, little external hard drives to protect them. It's actually great.
Yeah, it's a big challenge in the apparel industry because so many stores demand that you ship things in individual plastic bags.
Yes.
And so there's billions of plastic bags made every year to ship organic or to ship apparel around the world. We actually do have to supply some of our customers with this kind of thing. It's a system that exists, and so we didn't feel comfortable just using regular poly bags, and so we use it's called an oxo biodegradable poly bag, and it actually disintegrates in less than I think about 45, 90 days or something like that. So anywhere that we can have an effect is what we're trying to do.
Because you are now even at Nordstrom's, you have received some partnerships or entered into some partnerships with larger companies where I'm sure you encounter certain structures that are really challenging, and yet it goes both ways. You find materials that are still sustainable and responsible, and in a way educate the larger companies like Nordstrom's on sustainability efforts as well.
Exactly, and we feel like the more that we can get involved with larger companies, the more of an effect we'll ultimately have. I always say that it's better to get inside the building than to stand on the outside of it banging on the window.
Or throwing rocks or whatever.
Yeah, right. And
changing it from the inside out. Yeah.
Yeah, I really believe that. And it's a slow process. You're moving a mountain 1 inch at a time. And so the fact that Nordstrom has really come on as a partner for us has been really great. And we feel like we'll be able to maintain that partnership with them.
Yes, you have won numerous awards and you're a very young company still for your leadership. You planted 10,000 trees in Kenya. You've given away solar-powered LED lanterns to women in Haiti. All that can be found on your great website and people can order products there too. What's that website?
The website is wearpact.com. That's WEARPACT.com.
Great. Wonderful work. Again, Jeff Denby, the Chief Creative Officer and co-founder of PACT, PACT Underwear. Check it out. So worth it. It's, yeah, what I wear.
And thanks, that's Jeff. Enough reason for anybody
wonderful
to wear.
Work. Yes, try it. It's wonderful.
And yes, that. And so once again, we've come to the end of today's show. We still have a couple minutes left. Helge, you got any last words for us?
We'll have a mailbag. We'd love to hear your comments and questions and concerns and all of that, your thoughts. You as our listeners, we have a comment from, it's Valrico in Florida, Valrico. From Dana, she commented on our show on bees, and she said, "I look forward and I welcome them in the garden. I grow herbs just for them." They have a countywide ban on backyard beekeeping, and because of our show, it sounds like she's encouraged to maybe help have that being lifted, which would be a sweet victory. So, Dana, in Valrico, Florida, if you actually do get to lift that ban on backyard beekeeping, let us know and we'll celebrate it with you. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you might also want to look into FOG, which is the Florida Organic Growers Association, and you can find them at foginfo.org, and they might be able to help you with that cause too.
Great. Yes. And then my organic moment is actually about the very topic of pesticide use. A new Environmental Protection Agency report estimates current synthetic pesticide use in the United States agriculture at about 1.1 billion pounds a year. 1.1 billion pounds a year. This figure only includes farm and professional pesticide use. Not included are consumer or governmental pesticide use, which is about another 1.1 billion pounds a year. Also not included in this figure are so-called inert ingredients. Inert ingredients include solvents, emulsifiers, spreaders, other substances that are mixed into pesticides to make them more effective. So 1.1 billion pounds of pesticides used in U.S. non-organic agriculture. That's 3.5 pounds of pure pesticides for every single U.S. citizen. 3.5 pounds. Or in other words, 1.1 billion reasons to eat organic.
That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer is Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, always Jen Lloyd. Production assistants, Lauren Mulcahy and Vanessa Farron.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, please visit iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Brian.
And we will be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes, taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, as you can get anything.